Hello, and welcome to High and Low, a Curaçao podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, and today we have a super special guest.
Joel.
No.
Oh.
Joel's here. But super special guest, name is Aaron. He's a nerd and Joel's friend.
Greetings.
I mean, he's Spencer's friend, too. It's not, you know. Well, I happen to actually know him, but yeah.
Yeah, Spencer, you're awesome. Thank you for including me in your show.
Oh, you're welcome. I heard you really like this movie, so figured a good fit.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, this movie's awesome.
Did it remind you guys of anything? I mean,
have you said the movie yet?
No.
It's high and low.
Hot Tub Time Machine.
It's a Hidden Fortress from 1958.
Oh, man.
The Hidden Fortress.
Yeah, this is the first half of our 1958 pairing. So next episode will be Rickshaw Man, which also stars Toshirô Mifune. And that one is apparently a comedy drama and not like an epic action like this one.
Oh, cool. And what was that called again? Retro Man?
Rickshaw.
Rickshaw Man. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
So, I guess since we're talking about Hidden Fortress, we should probably get it out of the way. George Lucas is heavily inspired by this movie.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I think in Star Wars there's some similarities with some characters, maybe.
Maybe that THX movie you made? I don't...
Oh, gosh. I haven't even thought about THX in so long.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
I read the novelization.
Well, let me just say this. Okay, so... There are definitely similarities. There's definitely ideas that he could take. And there's like, straight-up shots that he's taken from, like, specifically the Tatooine scenes in A New Hope. But
well, also,
it's not like a straight copy for coffee here.
You wouldn't be happy speaking about like the sideways scrolling kind of scene change.
You're talking about the wipe.
Yeah, the wipe, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that definitely shows up a couple times.
Yeah,
in A New Hope, or I don't know about Empire Return, but oh, I felt is it all of them?
Even okay. Part 7 now. Yeah.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. But yeah, watching this, I realize A New Hope is kind of a mix of Hidden Fortress, Yojimbo, and Seven Samurai. Like, in terms of, like, his Kurosawa influence.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. Yeah.
Like, in Yojimbo, there's a shot in the beginning where Sanjuro cuts off the guy's arm, and the...
Oh, dang.
The bar scene in A New Hope... You know what it's called?
The cantina scene?
No, I don't. Yes. I don't know what you're referring to. No, I'm not familiar with the property.
In the cantina scene, when Obi-Wan cuts off the guy's arm,
he cuts off Pwn Dababa's arm. Yes.
Yes, it's the exact same shot from Yojimbo.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, and I think we talked about that when we watched Yojimbo for the podcast. Yeah. How it was like, it is so, like, exactly the same thing. But, it's pretty great.
Yeah. Do you think Lucas got a little worried, maybe a little sweaty, when Star Wars started getting really popular, and he was like, oh, crap, I totally did that thing from that one movie. Now I gotta explain this to everyone.
Maybe.
I don't know. It's not like a Fistful of Dollars. No, what's that one?
Yeah, it is. Fistful of Dollars is a shot-for-shot remake of Yojimbo.
It's not that type of deal. Yeah. It's still pretty similar to his movies. Well, I'm sure Kurosawa probably, on some level, appreciated it.
Yeah, I heard a lot of comparisons between Hidden Fortress and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, actually, also.
Interesting.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Was it The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
That the one with Bronson?
No, that's that one that just had a remake.
Oh. Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. He's also in Once Upon a Time in the West and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. I think that's what they were talking about, because it's like people who are wanted, like, and they just got done with a war and they're just trying to pick up their lives, and they keep like double crossing each other or tricking each other. Because I listened to a bit of the commentary that they have on the Filmstruck edition. One of the great things about Filmstruck is they have like audio commentary that you could just turn on if you want to. It wasn't nearly as interesting sounding as the other one for the Ozu I was listening to briefly. Mm-hmm. This guy sounded like he was reading off his cue cards or something. Like I texted you, Spencer, that he pointed out that this was Kurosawa's first widescreen movie. And it's so gorgeous.
It really shows.
Yeah.
Because, like, compared this to Seven Samurai, this looks like you get, like, a bigger scope, like, literally a bigger scope of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can see that he was, like, taking full advantage by, like, having close-ups of two characters in the same frame, and then like often showing people looking off of the frame to like action that is about to appear in front of them. Like just in that opening shot.
Yeah.
When, Pascal, you're going to talk on the microphone. Hey, cat's right next to the microphone. just that opening shot when the two goofballs, our two main goofballs are
R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Zing!
I mean, they're both R2-D2. They're both foul-mouthed perverts. Just like R2-D2 is known to be.
That's true. Neither is like a cowardly... I don't know. Well, they want the gold and... See, I mean, they're both... made of gold.
They're both cowardly. Neither of them are particularly intelligent.
Yeah, man. That opening shot you're talking about, though... is probably what really hooked me to this movie.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Like, it's kind of silly to say it's my favorite scene in the movie as it's the beginning, but it literally, like,
silly. It's just, you know, it's a great opening.
Yeah, I was hooked. Like, I saw that and I was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Like, where's this going to go next? A little bit of history behind this. I was invited to house sit for one of my friends, and he said I could watch any, you know, he's like, here's my DVD collection. And he had a very extensive, Kurosawa DVD collection. And, I had never seen one of this director's films. And so I just was kind of eyeballing each of them. And I was like, well, let's see what this Hidden Fortress thing's all about. And I just
cool name.
Popped it in. Yeah. I was like, cool name. And yeah, blown away. Absolutely. Positively blown away. I'm barely beginning my exploration into his work, but this is actually the first one I've seen. And
don't get excited, because like he didn't do that many like samurai stuff. He
did that's some, okay. That's okay.
Like not that many.
Cool. No. I'm interested in his work in general. Outside the realms of Tales of Samurai.
Well, I guess there's other kinds of movies.
Yeah. you've done most of his samurai stuff by now.
Yeah, you got the Throne of Blood, right? Isn't that still samurai set?
Yeah, it's Macbeth and medieval Japan. So yeah, samurai stuff.
Yeah.
And then you have the Ron and Kagemusha? Yeah.
Kagemusha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been introduced for a while. I'm going to name off the main cast first off, so it's easier to follow. Toshirô Mifune plays General Rokurada.
Yeah, Rokurodo.
Rokurodo. And that was A at the end.
Yeah. I had a lot of problems writing his name down in my notes while the movie was going.
Makabe.
General Roku.
We'll just call him the general.
The Han Solo type. But cooler than Han Solo, if you ask me.
Way cooler Han Solo.
I mean, he's the Obi-Wan, I would think.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Hmm.
There is some debate there. I could see where both of you guys are coming from.
It's kind of a mix, maybe.
I don't think he does anything as, like... The thing that makes Han Solo is that mm-hmm. he does stupid things because he's, like, a cocky bastard.
So, like, maybe Sanjuro is more Han Solo.
Yeah. Yeah, because, yeah, he does a lot more things that he thinks, at least in Yojimbo, that he thinks he's just going to get away with, and eventually he does come back to bite him in the ass. That's a good example. Yeah. This one, he is hell-bent on protecting the princess in this movie. And he does something semi-reckless, which ends up in his Darth Vader fight.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to.
And the Darth Vader character turns and becomes good.
Yep, exactly. And he throws the Emperor over the side of the...
Oh. let's see.
Man.
Misa Yuhari plays Princess Yuki. She's probably my favorite part of the movie. I'm always... her introduction is my favorite part.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
The two droid names, They're kind of long. I'm gonna butcher them.
You mean the character names or
the actors' names?
Oh, Minoru Chayaki.
Yeah, he was, and he's Tahai. He's a shorter one. He was in Lower Depths, and I think Yojimbo and Seven Samurai and a bunch.
Oh, he was in like a ton. Yeah, they were going through it up until Kagemushi or whatever it is.
Yeah, he's a Kurosawa regular. And Kamatari Fujiwara, who is Matashichi. He's from... We just saw him... Wait. No, yeah, that one. We just saw him in Tokyo Twilight as a noodles guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he's in Lower Depths, and he's in a bunch of Kurosawa stuff also.
It said he was the gambler in Lower Depths. I remember the gambler. I don't remember him looking like this actor, though.
Maybe it's good makeup.
Yeah. They made him look a lot younger in Lower Depths. And of course, the other... what's that guy's name? Tahai?
Yeah, Tahai.
Yeah, that guy plays the drunk guy in Lower Depths, which is... I mean, that's one of the best characters in that movie, so... Yeah. Love that guy.
Okay, the guy who plays Tahai, he was in Face of Another.
Did he play the face?
He was the apartment superintendent with the daughter.
What? He was the guy that was like, oh, I was just taking a bath.
Yeah, I think that's him.
I love that part of the movie.
Let's see, Joel, your father's in it very briefly.
Yeah, he's all old man makeuped up.
Can you tell me who Joel's father is?
Oh, let me show you. We first talked about him because our first movie was Seven Samurai, and he's like he's the one who gets everybody together, basically. So, but that was like his most noble and biggest leading role for Kurosawa, at least. In this, he's a very noble person.
Poor Joel. I see the family resemblance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, that doesn't show it as much, but let me see if I can get a better thing that looks just like my pop.
Oh, man.
Are you looking for Seven Samurai specifically?
Yeah. Oh, here we go. If you knew what my dad looked like, I mean, this guy needs a mustache, but...
Oh, yeah. I see it. I see the family resemblance.
Looks like Epi.
Yep. He totally... Yep.
that is Takashi Shimura. He is personally one of my favorite actors.
Oh, cool.
I'm always happy to see him and stuff, and he's in a whole bunch of old Japanese movies. He's in, I think he has like 250 film credits.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's crazy how much he worked. He plays a general who gets killed in the mountain base.
Off screen, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Quite right.
One of the people that stays behind.
That's when you're staring back up at the mountain range and you're seeing the smoke slowly rising or quickly rising.
Fire, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Susumu Fujita plays the Darth Vader general role, General Tadao Koro. He was in The Minutron Tiger's Tales. He was in Kurosawa's first, I think, 4 or 5 movies.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
And then he kind of got replaced by Toshiro as a lean man that he uses a lot.
You can see why. I mean, that guy's awesome. Don't get me wrong, but Toshiro is like charisma on screen.
Yeah, as soon as our two peasant folk type characters, immediately when they first see him, he's just so imposing.
Like,
and
whoa.
Like you're just like, oh crap, that guy's gonna like squeeze their heads off with his like thighs or something. You know, like he's just muscular. He's like ready to go. That stare, you're just like, yep, okay, all right.
He didn't scratch his chest in this movie, though. Very disappointing.
Well, he doesn't have fleas.
That's true.
Okay, I wish I explained that. In the movie Yojimbo, his character has fleas. That's apparently Kurosawa asked him to come up with a character trait to do in the movie.
Okay.
And so he decided he has fleas.
Fantastic.
He scratches his shoulders a bunch.
I also noticed he did it in the Lower Depths too, though.
He did the same thing?
Yep. He was like reaching right into his robe like, oh, I got a scratch for 3 days. Which would make sense if his character had fleas in that also.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the main cast. All cast you really need to know.
Yeah, everybody else is kind of big parts. It's the two robots, the Obi-Wan / Han Solo. It's the princess / Luke Skywalker. And then it's the evil general who's not actually that evil.
No.
Well, the more you mention it, it is very much like an Obi-Wan Anakin sort of relationship between both of them.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I don't know if you want to go. Am I going too deep?
No.
That's fine. All right.
Because when you as the viewer, when you finally see both of them on the screen at the same time, there's like this intense kind of like horse ride battle, you know, horseback battle, and which leads to, you know, back to the camp of the is it the Yamana? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Yamana camp and encampment, and you know, they get into this huge, like, ridiculously awesome spear fight, and you know. Intense.
That is like so well done.
Yeah, and it feels like the fight and They Live kind of where it just keeps going on.
Yeah.
Because these guys are both masters. And,
it's so cool. But instead of slaying him at the end of the battle, he lets him live and I don't know. There's some very Star Wars-y kind of things going on there.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Joel, you want to recap the story? Or maybe...
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to rely on Aaron. Are you kidding me?
Come on. Sick burn.
No, it's fine. I'm just excited to talk about the movie.
Oh, me too, dude.
So our two peasant friends, Tehai and Madashichi, we start off the movie with them just walking. They're trying to get to what is the name of the place that they actually want to go to?
Akizuki.
It is
Akizuki.
Akizuki is the name of the evil clan.
No, that's
that's the name of the defeated clan. That's right. Mm. No, they're trying to get to some territory, but they immediately
start with H. And
yeah,
write down.
Yeah, they're definitely trying to get home.
Hanamana, hanamana, mama. Yeah, we're good at this.
I wrote down, I forgot the names, but I just wrote down the symbols of each of the...
the different clans.
The areas. Different clans. So I drew like the moon and the three rectangles and the three dots and the line underneath it. Horrible. I'm horrible.
No, it's fine. But they are upset because one of them convinced the other that they were going to be rich if they joined this samurai war. And of course, they're both still two peasants. In fact, they even say that they sold their homes so that they could buy the weapons for the useless war. But they, as they're walking along, suddenly a samurai comes up from off screen and he's assaulted by several people on horseback. The peasants are cowering, and they get left alone. But and this is when you know these guys are kind of gross already, because one of them's like, "I'm going to take the armor off this guy." And the other one's like, "I'll have nothing to do with that. You're stealing from the dead." Like, "You've stolen from the dead before. That was different."
I believe one calls the other a shitworm.
Yes.
Oh, is that what he said?
Awesome. I can smell you from here. Yeah.
But you can smell that kid from Good Morning.
Yep. Which one? The one pooping his pants?
Yeah, that one pooping his pants.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, Aaron, you should watch the movie Good Morning.
I will.
Filmstruck.
That's what that
is. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, so at this point they separate, and this is just like in Star Wars when R2 is like, "I got a mission, I got to go on my thing." C-3PO is like, "Screw you, hippie." So they separate. I'll call him Mata. Yeah, Mata almost immediately gets caught because he walks up to walking up a hill because he's trying to get, like I said, across the border, and three other samurai run back in the other direction. And they're like, "Hey, you can't go that way. They're gonna kill you if you go that way." He peeks over the hill, and the entire border is being guarded by the Yamana clan.
Yeah,
yes, the Yamana clan. So he and his new three friends try to take off. Saying that we can't go anywhere until there's fog. Luckily, some fog does show up. And yeah, I'm skipping like the intervals.
That's fine.
We're just getting to the point where they meet up again. Fog shows up. They're navigating through. Like, "I can't see anything in this fog." And Mata's like, "Follow me." And he takes them directly into the the barracks, you know? And so they all get caught. The three samurai die. He doesn't, luckily. And they take him to be one of their many captured slave workers. On the other hand, Tahai has walked to a nearby town where everyone is gathered around a bulletin board, and he asks an old man to read it to him. And the old man says, "It says, we're looking for Princess Buttercup." No, wait, what's her name?
Yuki.
Yuki?
Princess Yuki. There is I think 10 Ryo prize on her head, and 3 Ryo for information leading to her capture. So everybody's all excited about this. He tries to leave town at that point. He's cooking up a scheme, but then all of a sudden a whole bunch of the Yamana clan guards show up and just gather up all these people. Like,
scoops them. They scoop them all up.
Like, yeah. They stab a couple of them and he gets scooped up with them. So our two peasants are reunited at a point where they just kind of see each other. Like, some of them are being forced to go bury the dead. These other guys are taken into a pit area and kind of forcibly pushed in there. And then the general of that, or not general, but whoever's in charge of that particular area pokes his head out and he says, "Hey, somewhere in here there are 200 pieces of gold. So every single one of you has to dig. Dig until you die." So, yeah, basically they're stuck in this pit digging for a while. That guy that was telling them the business,
I recognized him. Yeah.
And now I can't remember. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like he was sitting between the beams.
Yeah, yeah.
He was sitting between the beams shouting down at them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You Fujiki? No, this is Barrier Guard. Well, anyway, he's definitely been out of the Kurosawa movies. At the end of the night, they're all kind of gathered together so that the slaves can sleep. And then all of a sudden, they're caught up in the middle of a slave revolt. Like, literally, I don't know why the guards thought this was going to be okay. But yeah, they're... They're running around with torches. They're running around with their digging implements. They're mowing down guards. We do see a whole bunch of the slaves get shot. And I think this is the first time Kurosawa used guns in... No, that's not true.
Nope, Seven Samurai.
That's right, yeah. I forgot about that part. Yeah,
how could you forget?
But they used tons and tons of guns in this movie, which is interesting. How could I forget?
Yeah, the Toshiro's character gets shot at the end.
I've watched like 100 movies, man. I don't know what to say. All Kurosawa. But yeah, and they end up escaping. The slaves successfully revolt, I suppose, and these two goofballs take off. And they make their way to this river where they're just, once again, trying to figure out what they're going to do. Because they know now that they can't just cross the border from the Yamana clan area that they've taken over, where the other house used to be, into the safety of this other territory that all of a sudden we can't remember the name of. And as they're sitting there, one of them throws a stick that was in their fire. And they suddenly hear a clanking sound. They go over to figure out what the hell that was. And I didn't realize what, like, I thought maybe they'd like hit something, like somebody or something like that. Mm. That they go over, they find the stick. They don't see why it made a clanging sound, but one of them sees something shiny in the river. And it turns out there was gold in them there sticks.
Whoa.
And these guys are just gold crazy. They got the gold fever. It's pressed gold. It's specifically gold that's been hidden into these wooden beams to, you know, keep it away from people who might be looking for it. So they begin looking all over the place for more of these sticks. They do find a couple, but before they can get very far into their search, all of a sudden they see a man looking at them. Not just any man. The man.
Yeah.
Samuel L. Jackson. No? Okay.
No.
Toshiro Mifune. He shows up. They just kind of... I mean, they're walking towards like an opening between these two rocks, and he's just kind of there. And they're like, okay, turn around. Do that like whistle thing. Yep. And Toshiro follows them for a long time, so much so that they can't continue their gold search, and they have to go to camp for the evening after they think they lose him.
He walks up into camp.
Yep. As they're sitting there at camp at night, he just shows up. He's just hanging out. And this movie's so funny. Like, that part where he's like, hey! And Toshiro turns around. Oh, nice night, huh?
Yeah! I do that twice.
Hey! You think the weather's gonna change?
Goodness.
But it turns out that Toshiro knows exactly why they're there, and he even has his own gold piece and says, we could easily carry 200 gold pieces together if there are three of us. So it seems that there's a team up, although Mr. Mifune immediately takes control of the group, much to the displeasure of our two bumbling idiots. And they make their way to a really nice area that has like, I mean, it looks basically the same from the outside, except for to one area there is like the end of a river that has this like beautiful spring, and there's all kinds of sticks in the spring. So the bums are like, oh yeah, I bet there's gold in there. And Toshiro's like, no, there's nothing in there. And then when they go back to the cliffside area, he's like, okay, everybody climb up that hill. And then for like 15 minutes, these poor actors have to try to climb this rocky cliff, and the angles keep changing, so you know it was like cut, okay, let's get a better angle, cut.
Yeah, it looked very, very tasking.
Yeah,
at least how it was filmed. My goodness, those poor guys.
Yeah. And when they get to the top, they look over the side of this cliff that they finally gotten to, and they see a bunch of buildings. Turns out it's a hidden fortress. And one of them even says, the hidden fortress. And he looks at the cat now. That is. And they're like, oh, crap, this must be the Yamana clan. We got to get the hell out of here. You know, we got to tell the boss. And they're always they're screaming everything. You know, they don't know how to be quiet. They don't know how to, like, be stealthy. It's no surprise that they don't have any money or anything. They've probably got mugged a whole bunch of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when they go to try to find General Mifune, this is before they know he's a general. Spoiler. No. He's not there. He's not at the bottom of the cliff. Oh, yeah. He's already at the Hidden Fortress, that's right. He shouts at them, and then they, like, skate down to where he is.
And it's a great shot of him, like, looking tiny at the bottom of the hill, mountain, or whatever.
Yeah.
And he still is in complete control of the scene.
Yep. Because he already knows a bunch of shit. He's not going to tell them because he still doesn't know if he can trust them or not. So when they all get up to this fortress, or get down to this fortress, rather, he tries to get them to do a job. Like, for some reason, he needs these ditches digged. So he tells them to dig these ditches. They kind of get into an argument about, like, why are you the person in charge? Where he, like, leads them on a path, like, he's just walking away and they're chasing after at him, yelling at him. It turns out there's a much easier way to get to the hidden buildings. It's like, why didn't you tell us about this? Like, no reason.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. It's so funny because their immediate reaction is just like, why didn't you tell us?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is, I think, when they've established this Hidden Fortress as the place that they're going to stick around for a while, this is when we get the first glimpse of this wild woman, this lady who we don't know who she is, but she's wearing shorts. That's, I could tell you that. And she doesn't say a word. She just, like, is standing up on a cliff. Everyone sees her and is like, what the hell? I bet that's Princess Yuki. And she runs off before they can catch up to him. Mifune says, well, it can't be her because I already killed her. Look, here's the money that I got for killing her. And these two doofuses don't actually believe him, which is a credit to them.
Yeah.
You could have got that gold anywhere. Like, oh, I guess so. And they run into her once again later at the pond where she doesn't realize they're there. And they're trying to, you know, these are lecherous old bums that see a woman by herself. You know what they want to do. In fact, they come out and say it later, basically.
Yeah, it's not the first time.
But these two we get some Three Stooges action here while these two doofuses try to slowly approach her, and she keeps smacking them in the faces with these branches that are nearby, like, over and over again.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
It's like the stepping on a rake joke from The Simpsons. It is revealed eventually that this girl is living in a cave with another woman, a much older lady, and General Mifune there just shows up at this cave. And it turns out this is, in fact, Princess Yuki. And he is General... Well, there was a part earlier where the goofballs asked him what his name was, and he said the name of this famous general. And they laughed in his face because it's like, yeah, no way. I know who that guy is. You suck.
They say that, like, General Roku, like, died or something, or disappeared?
No. They don't say why they think that he can't possibly be them, other than that he's dressed, you know, he's dressed as shabbily as they are, practically.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's on purpose, because it's a disguise. He and the princess and the other people that know about the princess are all trying to hide her existence, because she is the last living member of the clan that used to live in this area, that the fortress belonged to, that all the gold pieces belonged to. And it turns out that the reason why he has gold for turning in the princess is because his own sister sacrificed her life so that the princess could get away. It's a really cool detail. Like, this, I remember so much of this movie, even though I only saw it the one time, because it's, all of it is so interesting and so well done.
Yeah.
Now, was there a part in Star Wars where the princess had her sister sacrificed? No.
There's a double in Episode 1.
Oh, yeah. And two.
Who is it? It's not Natalie Portman. Who's the other one who looks like her?
Keira Knightley.
Yeah, her.
And they blow her up in the second movie. Well, they blow up somebody. Yeah, so eventually he decides, General Mifune there, decides that he can trust the two bumbling goofballs. And he reveals a little bit more to them about what they're going to be doing. Like, he tells them that they kind of get onto the plan because the two goofballs go to the spring where they're getting their water. And they find a bunch of horses there. And they think, oh, crap! It's the Yamana clan. They found us. We're all going to die. It turns out that there are just more people that know about the princess that have come to visit him, including the guy that I claim to be my father. I'm not sure.
Have you told your actual father about this?
I showed him a picture of it, yep.
Does he see a resemblance?
No. It would be hard to communicate to my father why I think that the... looks to it. You know how dads are. They just don't understand.
Will Smith.
They don't understand Will Smith specifically.
No, I'm accrediting the quote to Will Smith.
Oh.
So we don't get sued.
Oh
good point, oh, good yeah. point.
All references to Will Smith songs are the property of Will Smith and his...
And Delaware's Jazzy Jeff.
Cause he's and...
Northern Delaware.
Yes, there we go. Tell him I said hi.
Will Smith, the future genie?
Yep. He's in the new Aladdin movie.
Yep.
He's a genie.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
I mean, he has the charisma to be a genie.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I'm saying that whole movie's not going to happen.
Oh, really?
No, they can't do that. And they yeah. can't even find Middle Eastern people, supposedly, to cast.
They
casted
someone. They found someone, yeah. apparently.
Oh, yeah? What's his name?
Some, like,
lies.
Person.
All lies. So, yeah, let's progress forward here. Eventually, they get moving. They Tashira reveals that they were right. All the sticks at the bottom of this river actually are the gold. And he gets them to unpack, or he gets them to retrieve the sticks without breaking them so that they could pack up these horses.
Nice.
And drag them along. And then he tells the princess that she needs to pretend to be mute so that these two goofballs don't figure out that she is actually Princess Yuki. Because even though he kind of trusts them, he still knows that they'll stab anyone in the back if they get a chance. And they show this throughout the movie.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Including at the very end.
Greed is definitely their driving factor. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they're too stupid to know when the right time is.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Bungling it up. Couple of bungholes.
Cornholio?
Yep.
I found this movie to be a very interesting, like, motion picture version of, like, the Dungeons & Dragons alignment table. Mm-hmm. Like, well, it seems like there's all kinds of different types of, like, D&D character alignments going on right before your eyes. Like, you know, I would consider, like, the two peasants to be, I would say, almost a lawful evil, essentially, because they're still trying to stay within the law, but, you know, waiting till no one sees while they're trying to break the rules, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So to speak. This is really cool.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know enough about D&D to do the rest of it.
No worries. No worries.
Don't bring your nerd crap on this podcast. We're cool dudes.
Pardon me.
No. I'm going to skip a little bit. The party ends up in a town because they're trying to blend in. They don't want to get caught. And Mifune says, you know, the best way to blend in is to be in a crowd, you know, best way not to stand out is to be in a crowd. And at this point, Princess Yuki wanders into what... It's kind of a all-purpose house of sin. You know, they've got prostitutes and they've got gambling going on. And she sees a woman being treated like crap because apparently she doesn't, even though she was bought, in quotation marks, by the owner of this establishment, she refuses to, you know, prostitute herself out to the customers.
I think that woman was also from her province.
That's correct. That's what she hears through the thing. That's how he ended up having this sex slave, essentially. And so she... What happens? She she wants to buy this woman's, like, from the guy.
Yeah.
And also the proprietors of this place want to buy Yuki because, you know, it's just a woman, whatever. And Mifune is like, I own her. She's not for sale. A guy comes in from outside, is like, hey, those horses you got all your crap on, they're too good for that. I'm going to buy them. Here's the money. I'm taking it right. I'm taking them all right now. Like, he doesn't even give him a chance.
Yeah.
Like, because he doesn't want to stir up any trouble.
Exactly.
So with that money, they're able to buy this this woman from them. And they have to get a cart. So from this point forward, the two bums are at the front of the cart pulling all these bundles of sticks. And everybody else is kind of pushing from behind the best they can. You know, they've made it a lot harder on themselves.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, now we've got an extra person that might blab to somebody.
I like the reveal of when they show that the freed woman is still with them.
Yeah.
When he is like, why don't you go home? And then it suddenly cuts to her pushing the cart.
Yeah. I don't have a home. Yeah. And it's at this point where they're pushing this stuff up a hill that a group of horses, like, rush by all of a sudden, and the two goofballs freak out. But Toshiro's like, no, 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 just keep pushing the cart. Keep pushing the cart. They're not going to bother us if we don't seem suspicious. And all they know is we're pushing a bunch of firewood. And one of them actually stops and says, hey, if you see a group with three horses, one woman, and three guys carrying a bunch of sticks, stop them. They're wanted for stuff. I actually think I skipped over the part where they have to go through
a
checkpoint.
Yeah, so he breaks the stick real quick, and I found this somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. To distract the guard.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a little scene. It's just one of the many little scenes where it's like...
But that scene's so great, though, because, like, they're all pompous and, like, sitting on their chairs, like, chuckling how they've like, acquired this gold and everything. And then when the guy on the horseback rides in is like, you know, be on the lookout for, you know, for this and that. And, like, the look on his face from smiling to, like, sheer shock.
He's like, we just had them.
That happens before. That's one of the reasons why they go to the town. That's right. Yeah. I like that scene because Mifune is like, he's literally putting his life in the hands of this. That is kind of Han Solo-ish because he's like, if I act like a total jerk, they'll kick us out. Like, I'm pretty sure they'd just stab you if they don't like you, man. They don't have a reason to. And he's just like, hey, where's my reward?
So what do you say that General Roku would shoot first?
He would probably, yes, of course he would. Yeah. Everyone would shoot first. Greedo, Han... Yeah. Roku.
And we all know that Sanjuro would shoot first.
Tasmanian Devil. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Bad Sleep Well, he'd shoot first. So, yeah, that happens with the horse and the cart. So they think, okay, we're safe. They're looking for three horses. We don't have any horses anymore. So this actually worked out for us. Except about 1 minute later, all of a sudden they hear the horses coming back in their direction. Yeah. So... General Mifune there takes out his weapon and mows down at least one of them, and the other two ride off in the opposite direction. He yells at them, like, keep moving forward, keep moving forward. I'm going to go follow them. He hops on the horse, and it's a really, really cool, like, panning shots of him chasing after these two guys who are trying to get back to the barracks or whatever this area is called that they came from.
I think it's like a training camp.
Yeah, and he's just chasing after them. He takes out one with his sword, and the other one, he's so like, good. Yeah, running as fast as he can. And you can tell in this part where they actually reused a couple of shots of him racing his horse by.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter because it still looks...
It looks amazing.
Yeah, it looks so good in the widescreen format. And the, like, they must have had, like, a really good copy of this. The picture is, like, crystal HD clear, at least on the Filmstruck version. Aaron didn't have... He's just read the book.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. 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 The book called The Criterion Edition. Yeah.
And he chases down the last guy all the way to this base. Like, he gets into the base and cuts this guy down. So...
And the horse is going so fast he can't stop it.
Yeah.
So he kind of gets stuck in the base.
Yeah. sorry. Yeah, so we have to assume he's going to die now. I mean, I assumed he was. Like I said, I hadn't seen this before, so he's in this base. There are, like, 50 guards, all with their spears pointed right at him. He tries to run out. Hold on a second. Sorry. And he tries to run out, and he can't get out of this circle. So the horse, like, freaks out. He gets off the horse, and then somebody's like, "Hey, you dude." And there's another general there. Nagakura.
Tada something.
Yeah, Izumi Nagakura. Is it Ayo Tadakura?
Yeah, the guy from the Men Who Train Tiger's Tales.
Right.
The border guard.
I see. So, yeah, they're two generals that, like, really respect each other's skills. Like, they both know each other and acknowledge each other.
Well, I liked how in that scene, like, he immediately tells his men, he's like, you know, they're just like, "Stand down." You're like, he could cut all of you down,
yep.
You know, like, but I also really liked how choreographed that scene was too. How, like, in unison, all the soldiers were like, they were realizing they were totally outclassed, outskilled, and they just could not handle this dude. And they were just backing up all in unison. It looked really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that, Toshiro just goes through a couple different spears, making sure he finds a good one.
Yeah. It's like, they're all crap, but you can pick anyone you want. Yeah. So, yeah, essentially these two generals are going to have a duel with spear weapons. And it is so good. This scene, just, we already kind of talked about it. Because,
yeah, sorry, I just had a gush because it's so good.
It stands out, like, them, you know, swiping at each other and like dodging and cutting down other parts and stuff like that.
Like, you see the I guess, like, the camp, like the tent in the background, and like you think, like, are they gonna cut those cut the cloth? And like, oh, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He cuts through a couple of those wooden, I don't know what those are. Like, I don't know if they're training dummies or whatever. You know, well, they're fighting and stuff like that. Which movie did this remind you guys of? Well, anything in particular, but I mean, if you have a specific Star Wars. Because I don't think it's very much like the first, you know, like in A New Hope when Obi-Wan is fighting Darth Vader, because that's very brief.
I didn't get a very Star Wars feel from this scene. If anything, it almost felt almost a little bit more like an Indiana Jones fight.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Except, you know,
Indiana Jones doesn't fight.
The Nazi didn't get hit with a propeller from an airplane or anything, you know? But it just had a very kind of like, you know, the fight, I think you put it best, or Spencer put it best, mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure, but the, like, They Live reference,
yeah,
how the fight just keeps going.
Yeah. You want... So it didn't remind me of any Star Wars?
Not to me, anyway.
It specifically reminded me of Spaceballs, though.
Oh!
The scene where Dark Helmet is fighting against Lone Star, and he, like, goes off the thing and kills the guy who's holding the microphone. I was like, is he going to stab one of those guys on accident? Like, he did it. What?
I see a Schwartz is bigger than mine. Mm-hmm.
Just more movement. Yeah. Yeah, I, like, that is so, it's so epically done. Like, and it's not tedious, even though there's a lot of pausing in between when they, you know, they flash to attack each other real quick. And I feel like that's, like, it takes a certain amount of patience to film out and choreograph and all that stuff that you just don't see anymore.
I mean, if it's like a John Wick movie, then yeah, but if it's, I don't know, if it's not like, if it's like a more standard studio, like, action movie, then not really.
I feel like John Wick, one of my issues with John Wick is that, like, yeah, he's a total badass, but he, mm-hmm. everything is handled in, like, 2 seconds.
Oh, that is true.
But, I mean, to be realistic, what? You want to take your foe out as quickly as possible.
Well, yeah, definitely.
Right?
This is a situation where two men respect mm-hmm. each other. It's almost like they don't want to kill each other.
Oh, absolutely. No, I totally got that. Mm-hmm. That this was not...
Well, maybe, like, the Raid Redemption.
Yeah.
Would be,
yeah.
Like,
I don't know. Maybe it was just from the Obi-Wan Harrison Ford or, you know, Han Solo side that he didn't want to slay his friend. But I definitely got the feeling the other guy was going to try to fight, you know, to the death. Or at least attempt to.
Well, it's once again, it goes down to the respect thing. If one of them is defeated, they'd probably just be like, yeah, kill me. And you see, that has repercussions. Because at the end, Toshiro Mifune wins this fight. And the other general gets down on his... Well, Toshiro, like, just immediately starts to leave. And the other general makes him stop. Gets down on his knees and waits. Because he's supposed to end it. He's supposed to kill him. And he doesn't. He says, I'll see you next time, or something like that, right? He says, I love you. I know.
Says, see you around.
Yeah.
Aaron,
yes.
Do you know who Lucas wanted to play Obi-Wan originally?
You know, I was watching some Star Wars casty kind of YouTube videos recently. I watched an interview with Sir Guinness, who was speaking about some of his experiences with Star Wars. But I cannot remember. Yeah, who was he supposed to play Obi-Wan?
Burgess Meredith.
Lucas wanted Toshiro Mifune to be Obi-Wan.
Whoa!
But I guess Toshiro probably wasn't interested.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Oh, dude, that would have been so cool.
Yeah, it would have.
Yeah. And
my mind is blown right now.
Yeah, and he had been in, like, Hollywood movies before. Like, he could speak English.
Okay.
Like, he learned phonetically, but he could still, like, do a movie in English. So it wasn't, like, a challenge for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. When did 1941 or 42, whatever that movie is, come out?
41, I think, was 78, 79?
Okay, so it was like afterwards. It was like, oh, I missed out on Star Wars. I'm not missing out on this Steven Spielberg movie.
Apparently, he liked making that movie.
I have more respect for Mr. Lucas now, actually, after you saying that. I think that's really cool.
No, he was very... I mean, he was like Tarantino without stealing that much. You know, he wanted to have like these like throwbacks and these tributes.
No, I think that that makes me really happy. Thank you, Spencer. That's really cool. That's really cool.
I feel like I would like Star Wars more if Toshiro was Obi-Wan.
I like that Alec Guinness was Obi-Wan because he hated it so much.
He hated it so much.
And that just makes me happy because I really enjoy his performance in the movie.
Yeah,
but like just hearing him, he's like, screw this space garbage. I'm a comedian.
He was a professional.
Yeah.
He spent most of his time off camera like smoking pot. He was just so... He was so done with the desert, I think. I don't think he wanted to be there.
I guess he wanted to be like another prestige picture and win another Oscar. Because I think he had won two Oscars by that point.
It's kind of upsetting, though, that... Because, like, he actually helped a little bit with the Star Wars script. Because he was, like, kind of... After he read it, he was like...
This is garbage.
I gotta rewrite some of this, you know? and so, like... So the showing where Star Wars was going to be like, you know, the press were able to watch it before its premiere, like it was getting some really good reviews already at that point. And Lucas actually called up Guinness and was like, hey, I want to give you more money, you know, because like the press thought this was really good. And unfortunately, he didn't get it in writing. It was just a phone call. So when he called, when he was speaking with producers about this, they screwed him over.
That's okay.
They screwed him over big time.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Might be another reason why he hated Star Wars.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, he hated it when he was doing it, too, so.
Yeah, that is true.
I remember one story. We're going totally off topic here. There's one story where...
That's appropriate.
Mark Hamill was like... going up to him and asking him for acting tips and stuff like that. And he finally just handed Mark Hamill $20 and said, go away. Like, oh, okay.
That's pretty good.
I'm going to go to the arcade, I guess.
Hamill is fresh off of his canceled sitcom, The Texas Wheelers.
Mark Hamill was?
Yeah, it was a sitcom where he and Gary Busey were brothers of a Texas rancher.
What are you even telling me right now?
It's a sitcom that lasted like six episodes in like 75.
Oh my gosh.
Their dad was played by character actor Jack Elam, the guy who had a messed up eye.
Is this available on any sort of way on YouTube?
No.
Oh, it's like what buried. A bummer.
I've been looking for a series for like 3 years, but I can't find it anywhere.
What's it called again?
The Texas Wheelers.
Okay.
Stop making up stuff.
If I ever find any copies of anything, I will let you know.
Oh, please.
So at this point, yeah. So General Mifune there, General Makabe, joins up back with the group. And, well, actually, now I'm losing track of where we were.
Epic fight.
Yeah,
after the epic fight.
He left his friend in the dirt and after, you know, trying to kill him and rode off.
Right.
And I believe they start traveling down the road and that's when there's a rainstorm.
Boy, I'm drawing a blank. I'm drawing a total blank.
The rainstorm is when they were hiding up in the hills. And
that's after this.
Yeah, Mifune has left to go. He's trying to find a different way to hide the gold. He's trying to acquire a different way.
Okay. So after he's he's run off. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, they're up there hiding from the storms and he's gone off to find, like you said, to find a different way to hide the gold. And the two bums start getting paranoid about like thinking that Yamana clan. Yeah. They're going to find them. And a bunch of villagers start walking by and they're all chanting and singing these songs and they're all carrying a whole bunch of wood. They get the bright idea to join this group of people and take their cart of wood because we're going to blend in. So the two bums grab the cart and they run into this group and they just start walking along with them and singing. The princess, I think it goes along with them, but the other lady that they rescued stays behind. Yeah. And when Toshiro shows up, she's like, they got into the line here with the rest of these people. It's a huge amount of people all heading in the same direction. Like, where are they going? It's the fire festival. They're going to build a huge pyre and they're going to burn everything.
Skip the part where the two peasants were contemplating raping Princess Yuki.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I believe the line was whoever takes the shortest stick takes a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Or something really like
that. That's what they say.
And
yeah.
Leering at her when she's asleep and then the lady they bought earlier steps in and threatens to crush them with a rock.
Yeah. She should have.
Which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
So these two guys are gross. They continue to be gross. They're not heroes. You ain't no hero. I didn't see you out there fighting that fire.
It did make me laugh to see them cower, though. I took some there was some gratification in that for me.
Yeah, they cower to everyone.
Right. There's a lot of Yamana clan that are going around. At first, they're like, we need to inspect all these bundles until we find the ones that have the gold. And it's like an impossible task because there's just so many of them. So they say, okay, we'll just keep our eye out for suspicious people. So when they finally get to the area where they have the pyre and they're throwing all their bundles onto this huge fire, naturally, the two goofballs don't want to throw this thing on there. They think it's a terrible idea, but the general shows up and he's like, no, throw it on there. Everything, you know, we don't want to be suspicious. Throw everything. Let them throw the entire cart on there.
Hey, toss the little cart, right?
And they're like, freaking out. And he's like, now everybody dance. And so they do this like dance number where it's like, shake your groove thing. No.
Actually, I thought the dance was really cool.
No, it was great.
I like the choreography of the scene.
Me too.
I like the whole thing. Yeah, the chanting, the singing, Princess Yuki is, this is the only time she's ever been allowed to do anything like this, so she is living, you know, living it up.
She seems to be enjoying it much more than everyone else.
Yeah, she's not scared because she, this is just a part of her life that she never thought she was going to get to experience. And at the end, after everything's cleared up and everybody's gone home, the including the most of the Yamana clan, they go and they get the molten pieces of, you know, gold that are now in the pit where the fire was, and start getting as much as they can, putting into the bags that they have. They no longer have a cart, so...
Yeah, it's burnt. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gone.
The two bums want to get as much as they can, but Toshiro's like, no, we can't carry that much. It's going to be you, me, and the other guy. The two women are not going to be carrying anything, so... Yeah, they get their packs a bit too heavy.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny how he was boasting. He was like, well, I could carry just as much as you can. Maybe even more.
I can carry three. Well, yeah. If you could carry three, I can carry three. I could carry five.
I could carry 50. Yeah, that's
what incorrect. Yeah, something like that. But they pack it up. They get moving. And they start making their way through this, like, meadow area. And two of the two bums are like, okay, we're gonna go back. We need to get the rest of that gold. I mean, it's just lying there, you know. So they start heading back in the area, and there's two Yamana guys that are just snooping around. So they do that thing where they whistle, you know, they're pretending. They start to walk away. They start to run. The Yamana look over. Oh, nope. They're just walking. They're walking very slow. Happens a couple of times, and then finally they book it, and the two Yamana guys just chase after them, realizing, oh yeah, there's the suspicious dudes. And I think this is when we start to get the, like, closing down, where the group is going to be actually separated, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And at this point, the tone changes, and it's like a creepy horror movie.
Yeah. As they have to get out of this forest, so...
And it's they're a heavy fog.
Mm-hmm. Running through, and they get into this meadow area, and they think they're going to be able to escape, and then as they go in one direction, all of a sudden there are men with rifles all over the forest. They go in the other direction, men with rifles, same direction, and they hide behind a big log that's in the middle, and they're getting shot at left and right. So it's at this point when the... Yeah, Toshiro says, like, okay, I'm going to distract him. You guys run. So he gets up to try to do this, but then the lady that they rescued gets up and runs out in the middle on her own. And Toshiro gets up and tells them, run for your life. The two bums actually do take off. They're out of here. They don't want to get killed. Forget it. He goes and rescues the lady, although she is wounded. And he and the princess... And this lady slowly make their way, like, from tree to tree. Like, they keep jumping behind rocks. It's actually, the way it's done is, like, you see them run and jump behind a thing. And then there's, like, a cut. And there's a shot of, like, these, like, squibs or whatever the equivalent was back then going off in these rocks. And then it goes back to them, like, peeking their head over without the without the shot marks in them. But
yeah,
they did the best that they could. It's cool. But they end up getting caught. There's no way to escape. They are completely surrounded, and they get taken to a nearby barracks or whatever to await their death sentence. They're tied to posts. All these people are bragging about how, we caught the real Princess Yuki. We knew that she was a fake. And they're just tied up there, and then somebody special shows up because he wants to... Oh, well, I forgot. The two bums decide, wait, maybe they won't kill us if we tell them where the princess is.
Yep.
So they show up at this barracks, and everybody laughs at them because we've already caught the princess, you losers.
And literally, they are just laughing at them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they finally get to the land that they were hoping to get to, whatever that place is, by walking past this border crossing, the guard area. So those two are free, at least, with their lives. I was hoping that they'd get executed. Didn't happen. unfortunately. Like, these guys are funny, and the movie is funny because of them, mm-hmm. but I hate them. I wanted them to be dead.
Yeah, they aren't good
people.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely wretched. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Scum. Yep.
Scumbags. A wretched hive of
scum and villainy. Yep.
Yeah. Starring.
A bunch of scruffy nerf herders.
Yeah. That's right. you were going to say they were a bunch of scrubs.
I don't want no scrub.
Well, nobody does, yeah. Yeah.
Always occupying the passenger side of my best friend's ride.
Trying to holler at me.
All right, nerds. So, yes, a person shows up to see the prisoners, and it turns out it is the previously defeated General Tadakoro. Now with a brand new scar all over his face. Like, when Toshiro sees him, it's like, what happened to you? Like, you disgraced me. You defeated me, and my lord... you know, punished me by doing this, beating me so terribly that now I look like this. And you should have killed me. You know, he's like really mad at him. And this is when Princess Yuki stands up. You know, she's been very headstrong and like wanted to do what she wanted to do. You know, the whole like spoiled princess type thing. Except there was a point where they mentioned that she was raised as a boy by her father. But she was still royalty, so she expected certain things. But she stands up for General Mifune here and says that you should... what does she say exactly?
She starts to sing the chant from the Fire Festival.
That's right. She thanks him. She thanks him for... Because he says, I'm sorry I failed you. He's like, yeah. I wouldn't have been able to experience this if you hadn't done what you did. Like, there's so many things I saw that I never would have been able to see. And I, you know, she's happy about that. Yeah. And so she sings the fire song. Fire. Yeah. And the next scene is them getting put onto horses to get taken away to be executed. And, what do you know, General, what's his name? Decides, Darth Vader? Yeah, Darth Vader decides, no. And, picks up the Emperor, throws him over the edge. And they're able to escape, and they tell the General, like, hey, come with us. You know, you've got a home now with us if you want to come along. And I was like, oh, this guy's going to die. Like, there's no way he's going to be able to escape.
I was fairly certain he was going to die, too.
Yeah, every time I see this movie, I forget he lives.
Yep. He does. He escapes too. So it's actually like one of the happiest endings I've seen with the Kurosawa movie. They Princess Yuki, the new maidservant, General Mifune, and the other general all escape together. And before this happens, he actually unleashes the horses that were carrying the large amounts of gold. So the horses happen to catch...
Where do horses end up?
They happen to catch up with our bum friends, who start freaking out. Like, one of them grabs a horse, the other one grabs three, is like, these are all mine now. Like, wait, we were supposed to split it 50-50. I found them first. They keep doing this, jackasses.
And they get arrested.
This is, of course, after they have a long conversation, and they're like, you know, let's still be friends after this. When we get back to town, let's be friends, okay? We've been through a lot together, you know? Oh, look, the gold! It's mine!
Screw you! I never liked you! Yeah. They get arrested by the people from this land. And they get taken from their jail cell to stand before the people who have called for them. And it turns out it's Princess Yuki, all dressed up in her princess garb, ready to shoot a blaster at the Death Star ninjas. I don't know.
Sure.
General Mifune,
proper uniform.
Exactly. They don't even recognize him because of how well dressed he is now. And the other general guy's there too, and he's like laughing at them because they're cowering in front of him. Ha ha, jackasses.
And they tell a peasant, thank you for helping us, but you can't have the gold. We need it.
Yep. Need it to rebuild the thing, but hey, you'll get a reward.
one real.
And they said, like, split between you two.
Yep. Send him on his way. And as they're walking down, the two bums are walking down the stairs, they go, you know what? You have it. Like, no, no, you have it. No, no, you have it. Yep. Okay, yep. I'll hold it for both of us.
Yep. Right when I saw them throw just the one at them, I was like, oh no, This is not going to go down well.
Later that night, one stabbed the other. You know that happened.
Yeah, probably.
So yeah, I mean, this movie has a happy ending, like happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the metal ceremony from A New Hope, but it's pretty close.
From a Nazi.
Yeah, that's from Leni Riefenstahl's Hitler movie.
That Triumph on the Will?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we had to watch that in the film class, or at least part of it for that particular part. It's like, it is exactly that scene.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Stuff you want to talk about specifically that we didn't talk about earlier?
I think we, like, thoroughly covered this movie, but it's like, so good. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of hard.
Like the perfect popcorn movie.
Yeah. 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 Seriously. Yeah. Yeah. And you get, like, I got sucked in. Like we said, basically from the very first scene, it's like, you can't look away from what you're seeing because it's just so well done.
Yeah.
I think you put it best, Joel, that it definitely takes advantage of the widescreen format in such a way that is just so innovative and interesting and fun. And I love this movie. I've only seen it twice, but it's like it's a great ride.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, this is easily my top three Kurosawas, and I've seen about 2/3, which is like 20 movies.
So how much Star Wars do you actually feel is in this thing?
Who are you talking to?
Aaron.
Okay.
The guy we brought on that knows Star Wars, come on.
I definitely saw, you know, the comparisons between the peasants and the droids. Kind of their journey, when they separated paths and whatnot, I felt that was pretty Star Wars. Every time this a scene was changed, I was like, yep, okay. All right, Lucas, see what you did there. See what you did there.
I mean, they did those same swipes in Battlefield Earth, so I think
through
the physics of time and space all existing at one time, I think technically they all stole from Battlefield Earth.
Okay. So Lucas just happened to go into a theater at some point and
yes,
sit down and was like, oh, let's do this Battlefield Earth thing.
Yep.
Okay.
Forrest Whitaker. I got to get him in my next Star Wars movie. Oh, actually, it wasn't his, but yeah.
Oh. Yeah, there's some Star Wars in there. Absolutely.
I mean, what specifically do you think? Is there anything specifically that you, like, comes to mind?
Nothing that I could really call out, like, immediately, but the redemptive path of the general, I felt, because it was very Anakin Obi-Wan while I was watching it.
There's one shot in the beginning with the two peasants that I'm pretty sure is exactly the same shot in A New Hope of the two droids.
Probably.
I can't remember where, but it's like, it's when the two droids in New Hope, it's when they're going through, like, the desert, and they're, like, in between, like, these two huge, like, walking in a path between, like, between, like, a mountain or something, and just, like, a wipe across, and I think it's
one of the many sand dunes.
Yes, it's like in the desert rocky place.
They're walking next to one of the crate dragons. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, it's a crate dragon skeleton. It's not actually a crate dragon, but you know what I mean. And then there's Banthas. Yeah, I mean, like, I can see, yeah, it definitely inspired Lucas, but I got the impression from not just Spencer, but from a lot of people that it was like, oh no, when you see this movie, it's like, oh, it's all Star Wars, like 100%. It's like, no.
It's definitely there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But it, like, people pointed out, like, it's something he should be ashamed of almost. Like, oh, he ripped him off. It's like, no one does that with Scorsese, and he ripped off all kinds of, like, you know, John Ford movies and stuff like that.
Yeah, I definitely don't feel that it was like a,
It's not like a Yojimbo situation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I could tell maybe it was just the fact that he was just inspired by this movie. I don't feel like there was any blatant, at least too much ripoff.
I think it was something that people knew before, like, say, the new movies came out. Not the newest movies, but the prequel trilogy. And then when the prequel trilogy came out, it just, like, became a weapon for the people that wanted to put down George Lucas. I think that's where I got my information from. Like, he's not original. Like, well, nobody is, man.
Exactly.
Everyone steals from their influences.
Yeah. Except for David Lynch.
I don't know. There's some David Lynch stuff in this.
He's never stolen from Dolly or from...
Lynch, I can Boone tell well. You, stole a name from Sunset Boulevard.
Or shit.
His character in Twin Peaks, Gordon Cole, that's, I think, a police detective in Sunset Boulevard.
That's just a coincidence. It's not like he made Mulholland Drive, which is, you know, kind of going on the same, you know, heartbeat there.
No, not at all.
Okay.
But,
man, just... Honestly, just talking about it, I want to go watch it again now. Like, this movie's just so awesome.
Yeah.
This is like a good starter for Kurosawa.
Cool. All right, Spencer and or Joel, answer this question for me then. What should I watch next?
I mean, you haven't seen Yojimbo?
I haven't seen any of his films other than this movie.
You should watch Yojimbo.
Yeah, I go Yojimbo.
Okay.
Maybe Seven Samurai, but three and a half hours.
That's really long, and it's a great movie, but yeah, I think Yojimbo is a nice, it's like 2 hours, right?
Okay.
Yeah, like 2:20, 2:15.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I'm basically going to be going in house sitting once again for my friend coming up here, so I was probably going to try to delve into more of his work.
Yeah, so watch Yojimbo.
Okay.
Then watch The Vineyard, and then watch The Greasy Strangler again.
Oh, Greasy Strangler.
Which is also very inspired by Kurosawa. Yep.
I definitely don't want to throw up, so I probably won't watch that.
Greasy Strangler is a genuinely the funniest movie I've seen this year. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it made me laugh very hard.
I was a little horrified, but I had fun with it in some ways. I thought Yuki was very striking in this movie as well.
I wasn't listening. What did he say?
There's something about Princess Yuki is this, like, I think she's one of my favorite, like, Kurosawa characters.
No, she stands out. I was thinking that the movie's called The Hidden Fortress. I wonder if that is what the Japanese translation is, because the actual fortress in this movie is only in for the first, 45 minutes, and then it's used, it's burned down. So I feel like it should have been, like, The Hidden Princess or something like that, because...
There's a remake of it. Called Hidden Fortress, The Lost Princess.
Oh, I thought you were going to say called Star Wars again. I was going to be shut up.
There's a literal remake of it.
Oh, I see.
And I think it's in the 90s or 80s.
Well, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, it looks like a shot-for-shot remake and kind of bad.
Yeah, no thanks. You can't replace Mifune. It's impossible.
You've got my curiosity going, Spencer, but I don't know if I want to do it. I don't think I will.
It's 2008.
Oh, great.
Yeah, but like...
Damn millennials.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, their avocado toast and their remakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mifune is this a one-of-a-kind...
Steep universe.
You can't copy that.
They watch good cartoons like Gem and the Holograms. No. So I don't think... I forgot to tell Aaron that he needs to talk about other movies from this year.
Yeah.
Shit.
I'm not sure if you've... have you seen, say, The Blob? Or...
Okay.
The Fly?
Do I need to recommend another movie that from this year?
Oh, you don't have to recommend. Oh. It's like we just kind of like pick out another notable title.
Okay. Well, I've seen The Blob.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the keyboard. I was like, why isn't it scrolling up?
Let's see here,
little baby.
Would you recommend The Blob?
I prefer the remake over the
the original.
Yeah. The 80s remake of The Blob is pretty amazing.
With Steve McQueen.
That's the original movie.
Yeah, I was going to say. I think I've seen... Yeah. Oh, sorry, Spencer. No, I was just going to say...
Steve McQueen would have been dead for 8 years by that point. Like in the 80s or whatever.
Anyway. Yeah. I've also seen parts, but Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, which also came out this year, 1938.
Mm-hmm.
Ford, 58.
It's the year my dad was born.
My dad was 56.
Oh.
Not the fly. Not the fly.
I've seen the original Fly.
I haven't. Not
very good. The next movie will be The Rickshaw Man, which stars Mifune, as I mentioned earlier, and there's another cast member from this movie who is in Hidden Fortress and Rickshaw Man. His name is Kokutin Kodo. He was in Scandal as the goofy old man that they run into in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And he's in Seven Samurai as a goofy old man. And he's in Godzilla as an old fisherman.
Oh, yeah, I know the old fisherman.
He's in Throne of Blood. And, he's in a lot of Kurosawa stuff.
He plays the rickshaw, is that correct? Are we doing the other special edition one in between, or are we saving that one? Well, thanks for being on, Aaron.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
You want to talk about other things that you do?
You can find me, let's see here. I guess I'm on Twitter under Hyper Hero Man. And I like to draw things like goblins, and I like to hang out with Joel and Spencer. You guys are cool dudes.
I don't suppose you do another podcast, do you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess you could find me on this other podcast with this guy named Joel and my friend Sarah. And we talk about science fiction fantasy movies.
And it's called the High and Low Podcast. Aaron, what's the name of the podcast?
It's called Space Pod. Please don't send me there.
Please send me to outer space or something like that.
Please don't send me to outer space. Found at pdsmios.podiant.co.
Please don't use a trebuchet to send me into space, sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last episode we recorded was on the movie Mary Jane's Not a Virgin Anymore, which Spencer is on the episode. And he picked it, so if you find any of the content uncomfortable, it's his fault. That's part of our Summer of Love special. The movie that we're going to be doing after that, hopefully, is called Firequake, I think it's called.
Yeah, looks like it's going to be a treat.
Yeah. It's from this decade, so...
Is that like a sci-fi movie?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a random pick, so...
Okay.
I don't know anything about it.
Sounds like a disaster.
You're fired.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, Aaron, thank you for your time.
Appreciate it, man.
If you want to come on again, you know, tell us the movie.
All right. Thank you.
If you haven't covered it already.
Cool.
He wants to be on Yojimbo. Oh, wait.
Yeah, that's done.
Damn.
Well, there might be an anime special in the future.
Oh, that'd be
sick.
Great.
Yeah.
I do like anime.
Well, there'll be a couple. One's going to be on Studio Ghibli. That'll be in November this year.
Ghibli.
Cool. Oh, exciting. Well, yeah. I'd love to come back and hang out with you guys. Be good. Yeah.
Any last words?
Nope. I'm good. See you next week, next 2 weeks, something like that. Adios.
Effie is a Thug Life Pineapple Party. The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. The show's Twitter is @highandlowpod. The show is available on the Google Play Store, Podiant, PODIANT, Podbean, as bean, not beam, and iTunes, and wherever you find your podcast. Thank you for listening.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Skinner.
And we host
Predictocast.
We watch the first 10 minutes of a film we know nothing about and then try to predict what happens next. We use an advanced algorithm to ensure the most accurate predictions imaginable.
Not really. We mostly make predictions about werewolves showing up or if dogs will talk.
New episodes are released every Thursday.
You can find us wherever you download podcasts or at Predictocast.com.
We predict you're going to love it. Way now, give it away, give it away.
away, give it away now. Just give it away, nigga. Yeah, here we go now. Tell me what you really wanna do. Come here, ma. Talk to a nigga, talk to me. You look like you can really give it to a nigga. But know what you're talking, the way you try to walk for me, the way you really try to put it on a guard. Doing it like I never did before for me. The way you break your back and I break your neck, and the way you try to put it on the floor for me. Come on. Y'all niggas one time when I lock it down and I hit you with that. That bomb shit, y'all niggas know all day.